You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up, many Native American students across the country have been prevented from displaying culturally significant symbols like eagle feathers or beadwork as part of their graduation outfit. We'll talk to a reporter who's been following that story. Now, Wisconsin lawmakers are hearing public testimony this week on two bills that would prevent transgender women and girls from competing on sports teams that match their gender identity. One of the bills would keep transgender girls from playing on girls' teams in K-12 public schools and private schools that take part in the state's voucher program. A second bill would prevent trans women from playing on women's teams at public universities and technical colleges. Wisconsin isn't alone. 25 other states are considering similar legislation. Three states have signed transgender sports bills into law, though Idaho's is caught up in court. We're talking about this wave of bills around the U.S. that would affect transgender girls and women's ability to participate in sports and why they're coming up at the same time, the legal arguments for and against them. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you want these bills to pass here in Wisconsin? The state athletic organizations currently have the rule that transgender girls and women can only participate in sports after undergoing hormone therapy to lower testosterone levels for a year. Do you think that's a fair standard? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Don Heider-Markell is professor of political science at the University of Kansas. He's co-editor of The Remarkable Rise of Transgender Rights and Transgender Rights in Politics, Groups, Issue Framing, and Policy Adoption. He also edited the Oxford Encyclopedia of LGBT Politics and Policy. Don, welcome back to Central Time.
Good afternoon.
From what you're seeing in Wisconsin's bills that I just mentioned, how do they compare to what we're seeing in so many other states around the country?
They're quite similar to most of the bills that have been introduced this year's legislative sessions, and in terms of specifically targeting transgender girls and women.
And why do you think we're seeing this wave of bills? As I mentioned, about half the states in the country doing something along these lines. Why now, do you reckon?
Well, a couple of different factors. One, it's part of a broader sort of backlash against transgender rights that really began in about 2016, following the decision on same-sex marriage in Obergefell versus Hodges. But it's also partly a result of other recent successes of the transgender rights movement, including the 2020 decision in Bostock versus Clayton County, which provided employment protections for transgender people.
I want to give a listen to one of the lawmakers in Wisconsin who introduced these bills. This is Representative Barbara Dietrich, a Republican from Oconomowoc, talking about the bill at a press conference in March.
Our own Lady Elcats from Lake Mills would not have had the chance to enjoy their phenomenal accomplishment this past weekend of securing a state title without the passage of Title IX. Now, in a fractured, well-meaning attempt at inclusion, biological females are losing opportunities at titles, records, scholarships, and even participation at times.
Don, what stands out to you there?
Well, a couple of things. First, the so-called evidence that's being cited in some of these cases, and in most states, they can't even point to a single example of a transgender athlete that's been in competition and led to these kinds of problems she's pointing to. Secondarily, the real question here is, if transgender people are going to participate in sports, how should that participation occur? And she fails to mention the fact that there are standards, which you mentioned at the top of the show, but the NCAA also has standards. The Olympic Committee also has standards. And there are standards out there. Simple exclusion is not the way forward on this issue.
As she mentioned, the idea of, in a sense, protecting girls in sports from unfair competition and that framing. And I think this is something you've thought about, Don, of protecting girls or women, in this case, in sports. How important is that as part of the framing here?
Well, in terms of the transgender backlash in general, the focus has been on this notion of protecting girls and women. So the wave of bathroom bills we saw in 2016 were all couched around the notion of trying to protect women and girls from what was seen as harmful transgender people. And it harkens back to much the same way there was a backlash against gays and lesbians in the 1970s, all focused around protecting girls and protecting women in particular from this supposed threat. But again, the notion is first point to where the actual problem is. And secondarily, there are real standards for how participation can occur without it being unfair competition.
Right. I think one concern is that it not even about somebody who would really identify as transgender, but a boy who, say, wasn't competitive with other boys, saying, declaring themselves to be transgender so they could participate in a girls' league, getting scholarships. Again, these standards of a year, in many cases, of hormone treatment, make that sort of a quick flip idea less likely, if I'm understanding things correctly.
Yeah, absolutely. The existing policies, for example, with the NCAA really specify that this has to be part of a medical regimen, that this has to have been documented and occurred for some amount of time before competition can take place. And it sort of documented in terms of science, the medical science, what it means to go through those hormonal treatments, what it means to go through testosterone blockers, or even pre-pubescent treatment that is occurring with some children nowadays, to not have gone through that puberty stage. All of that can be documented and creates a more level playing field.
Talking to Don Heider-Markell from the University of Kansas, political scientist there. He's edited books on transgender politics and the law, looking at legislation in Wisconsin proposed here and elsewhere, banning transgender girls from participating in sports at the high school or college levels. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and your questions. Let's go to your calls now. AJ is with us in Green Bay. AJ, hello.
Hey there. For taking my call. My question on this whole topic is, how many cases are there in the state of Wisconsin that transgender girls are trying to compete and overthrow a state title?
AJ, thanks for the call. I don't know if I have Wisconsin numbers. I saw something, I think it was in the New York Times, out of 200,000 girls in athletics in the country, something on the order of 50 transgender. Don, that's just off the top of my head.
Yeah, and that would be that number would be pretty likely. In other words, you're talking about at the most 2% of the total population, and better estimates are usually like a half of 1% in the overall population. On top of that, transgender youth in particular are less likely to participate in sports in the first place. So at any given school, it's very unlikely that there's even going to be a transgender athlete. For the most part, if you look across a state like Wisconsin, you might have less than a dozen potential athletes participating in sports. So it is a very small number. Here in Kansas, we've gone through the same thing, and in Florida as well, where no one could point to a single athlete as being a source of a potential problem here.
Thanks for the call. We'll go now to Maggie in Madison. Maggie, hello.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, Maggie?
I just wanted to mention, with respect to the comment about regulating hormone levels of transgender athletes, that there are a lot of women who were assigned female at birth who are professional athletes who have different levels of hormones naturally. So a woman who might have more testosterone that helps her sprint faster. And so if you're going to force transgender athletes to regulate their hormone levels, then it seems to me like that's a really dangerous position to take, because there is just natural variance within people.
Maggie, thanks a lot for the call and for sharing your thoughts. And Don, I've seen once people start arguing about hormone levels and men versus women, or within, as Maggie was saying, among women, and then a transgender athlete on hormones, it gets really complicated really fast. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, naturally, there are natural variations amongst women and men, of course, as well, in terms of testosterone. And that's the key hormone we're thinking about here. And the Olympic Committee has struggled with this issue for a number of years, and it's been a significant one. And I think once you get to that level of competition, that's where this becomes a trickier issue to sort of disentangle. But the Olympic Committee has gone forward with that. When you look at the lower levels of competition, I think the differences that this is going to make are less significant. But the average variation, say, that you can cause by increasing or decreasing somebody's testosterone level can be in the range of a performance difference of 10 to 12%. And that 10 to 12% is often about the difference that you get between, say, female runners and male runners at the Olympic level. So that's pretty significant difference, and certainly you would want to have baseline levels for individuals.
We're talking about a transgender sports legislation here in Wisconsin and many other states. Don Heider-Markell stays with us, professor of political science at the University of Kansas, co-editor of the book, among others, The Remarkable Rise of Transgender Rights. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a transgender athlete yourself or parent of loved one of a transgender athlete? What are your thoughts on the Wisconsin bills that would keep trans girls and women from playing on girls and women's sports teams? Are you involved with youth sports yourself, especially girls sports? What are your thoughts on this? 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our talk with University of Kansas political scientist Don Heider-Markell about bills in Wisconsin and about half the states in the country that would prohibit transgender women and girls from playing on girls and women's sports teams. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and questions. Back to your calls now. Jean is with us in Poygan. Jean, hi.
Hi. I'm responding to the comment made by the legislator who believes that having transgender girls would have unfair competition, would present unfair competition to girls' teams. And my comment is that I'm not hearing this from the girls themselves. I'm not hearing from girls that they feel threatened by or would be uncomfortable by or would be afraid to compete teams that have transgender girls on them. So I'd like to hear more about what the students themselves think about this issue.
Jean, thanks for the call. And I'll note at that press conference from Representative Dietrich we played earlier, I believe there was a young student athlete, a girl who was supporting the bill. Also in Connecticut, Don, I think it was Connecticut, where there was a court case after a transgender girl had won some track events. Some girls had participated in a lawsuit over that. So at least there are some, I don't know about numbers, but some girls in athletics joining these concerns. What are you seeing?
Yeah, most folks point to the Connecticut lawsuit as the example of this, but overall, this is a solution looking for a problem. And again, there is a solution if it's a concern, and that solution is best practices policies that could be implemented. Simply targeting transgender girls and women and excluding them from the important participation in athletics, especially for young people, is such an important extracurricular activity for them to engage in, that exclusion does far more harm than what supposed benefit you get out of passing these laws. Sort of targeting this one really small portion of the public of the population and telling them you can't participate at all is really unfair.
Thanks for the call. We'll go next to Aaron in Green Bay. Aaron, hello.
Hi, thank you for having me. I just wanted to echo some of the same sentiments that have already been stated, that this is really legislating a problem that does not exist. I myself was a female athlete in high school and college. I have been coaching at the high school level, and the female athletes that I coach have never brought this up. It is not something that is a concern of theirs. And in addition, I know the point the legislator made was protecting women and girls. I think there are many more important issues, things we can be doing to truly protect women and girls, red flag laws, looking at domestic violence, domestic abuse, things that have been tried to be passed at the state level, but really have gone nowhere. I just think that it is a waste of time and energy when there are other more important issues that we could be doing to help students and athletes. I'll take your comments off the air.
Aaron, thanks for the call. Don, your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, obviously we're living in the middle of a pandemic. We've had practically an economic collapse, let alone the plethora of issues that women and girls face in American society. And I think there's many other ways to help women and girls rather than this kind of targeted legislation. In terms of fair competition and such, in requirements of Title IX, that schools and public schools and universities rarely sort of really meet the requirements to fully fund women's sports, to fully allow for the kind of participation in women's athletics that they do for men's athletics. So if folks really want to sort of target protecting women and ensuring that women have the same opportunities, I think there are much better ways to go about this.
Thanks for the call. Talking to Don Heider-Markell from Kansas, from the University of Kansas, looking at transgender laws, legislation in Wisconsin, some laws passed in other states. Back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Tom is on the line in Milwaukee. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I'm wondering, for athletes that perform individually as opposed to team sports, would it make any sense to have a separate category for transgender athletes?
Tom, thanks for the call. It would be, at least at this point, Don, a pretty small league, it sounds like, given the numbers we're talking about.
Yes, it would be very small. I mean, that's the primary problem. The secondary problem is sort of the separate but equal notion that we'll be able to sort of have these separate ways to participate that will presumably be equal. And we kind of know what the history of that is with a variety of issues in American society. So that seems problematic on its face. But I think it's an important point to note that for team sports, this is far less likely to be apparent. For individual competitions such as track, it's a more significant potential issue. But again, the number of cases that anyone can point to across the United States are very small. And again, there are best practices for ensuring that we can make a level playing field for girls that are competing in high school as well as in college.
Thanks for the call. We heard from Robin in Vernon County, who's curious about the politics of this effort. Robin wanted to know if this was being used as a wedge issue to divide an already divided state. What are your thoughts on the politics, Don, on this wave of legislation?
Oh, absolutely. I can tell you for sure this is seen as a win-win issue for Republicans, that they can't go wrong, that the population that they're targeting is so small that the relative backlash that they're going to receive is going to be small. And I think they're underestimating how wrapping this in a variety of other culture war issues is going to allow them to achieve victory in upcoming elections.
Now, you've edited a book I mentioned about the remarkable rise of transgender rights. I mean, we saw a quick turn in the country when it came to legalizing of same-sex marriage. Have we seen a similar, maybe even surprising change in what people think of transgender rights in a similar time span?
Yeah, well, it's been, as we title the book, remarkable how quickly that transgender rights has come on to the political discussion in the United States, and the increasing familiarity with transgender people. For gay and lesbian people, there was a similar sort of evolution over time that was relatively rapid, say, compared to racial issues in the United States. But for transgender rights and policies, this has been evolution that's occurred in the past 15 years, and especially in the past 6 or 7 years, where familiarity with these issues and adoption of policies to protect transgender people has been really quite remarkable.
Do you anticipate more legislation? We saw the kind of a wave of the so-called bathroom bills a couple of years back. Now we've got these sports-related bills. Do you see it likely that we'll see more transgender-related bills, maybe a backlash against some of the changes you've seen?
I think some other ways, right. So some new bills were introduced, for example, in Tennessee this year that were trying to specifically change the sort of way this issue gets framed. So rather than, say, banning transgender people from using the bathroom that is consistent with their gender identity, this instead would open up schools and other public facilities to lawsuits if they did allow transgender people to use facilities that match their gender identity. So rather than banning it, they're simply allowing for potential legal repercussions for organizations that go ahead and do this. So I think they'll try to thread the needle on these issues and continue to see what works. I think the athletes legislation is seen as a winner, but I also know that as you pointed out earlier, that there are already lawsuits against a number of these laws, and these lawsuits are going to sort of drag on for a while and obviously cost states money.
We'll leave it there. Don, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Don Heider-Markell, professor of political science at the University of Kansas, co-editor of the book The Remarkable Rise of Transgender Rights. He joined us for a look at transgender sports legislation here in Wisconsin and in states around the country. Coming up, we'll find out why some high schools prevent their Native American students from displaying their cultural heritage at graduation ceremonies. And we'll talk about some of that heritage and what it means. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today at 6 on 1A Plus, how would you change the tax code? Author Dorothy Brown says our tax laws need a fundamental overhaul. She says the system should reward measures that narrow the nation's huge racial wealth gap. But how do you set up a tax code that works for all Americans? That's today at 6 on 1A Plus. Now, high school graduations are a rite of passage for young people. Students put on the caps and gowns, make their way across the stage to get their diploma. Many of them will get to do it in person again this year. For some Native American students, it's also a way to honor their cultural heritage. But some high schools prevent Native students from using culturally significant symbols as part of their graduation attire, including things like beadwork or eagle feathers. Our next guest has been following how this issue plays out at high schools across the country. You could join in at 800-642-1234. If you're a Native American student yourself or were in the past, is this something you ran into? If you're a parent, was your child able to wear items like an eagle feather, or were they prevented from doing so? And for anybody, do you have questions about how all this works, what all of this means? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Mary Annette Pember is a national correspondent for Indian Country Today. She's also a citizen of the Red Cliff Band of Wisconsin Ojibwe. She recently wrote the piece, Graduations Shouldn't Be Another Form of Erasure. Mary, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, can you lay out the issue you covered here? What kind of objections do schools sometimes raise when Native American students want to wear these important items of their cultural heritage?
Well, I think it's a kind of an effort towards uniformity, so that, you know, if some students were wanting to wear perhaps really controversial items, and it's just sort of a way to squash that. And I think it reflects just a really deep misunderstanding that, you know, for Native folks, this is not really, it's not so much of a political expression. I mean, it's it goes far deeper. You know, it's a cultural and spiritual issue. So I think, you know, schools just in their enthusiasm of kind of, quote unquote, keeping everything equal and uniform, they often err on the side perhaps of being a little bit too enthusiastic regarding students wearing any kind of elements in their caps or in their gowns.
I want to focus in on one item that you wrote a lot about, the eagle feather. Can you first of all just talk about the meaning that people at large outside of Native American communities might not be familiar with when it comes to the meaning of the eagle feather?
Yes, well, one receives an eagle feather, you know, as a real special, to recognize a very special, perhaps transition or accomplishment in life. It's, you know, it's very important. It's not something that one would, normally sort of carry around to decorate oneself just in the everyday. It holds a great deal of meaning for many tribes. And Native folks are folks that are allowed, eagles have been protected, but, you know, we are allowed to possess those feathers. So they have a great deal of import for us.
Right. And it's not, people might think, oh, it's a decoration on a graduation outfit. It means something. It's more than a decoration. Can you talk about the meaning when that high school graduate in particular would want to wear that in a ceremony?
Yes, and I think, I think often the schools will sort of see everything as anything that goes beyond just the standard cap and gown is, quote unquote, decoration. And, you know, this is not decorative. These Native regalia, you know, some people will do a little beadwork or they'll have a sash, and then they might be wear an eagle feather or carry an eagle feather that was presented to them by an elder in their family or in the tribe to recognize this great achievement they've made. You know, Native students have the lowest high school graduation rate of pretty much any ethnicity in the U.S. I don't have numbers for Wisconsin for you, but they are quite low. So it's a big achievement. And it's not something I think that one can equate with, quote unquote, decoration. Like if one were to put, Pokemon or something on your cap, it's these are not equivalent things.
And you write that often, you know, as you said earlier, this is just kind of a blanket policy. Sometimes when it's brought to a school's attention and the importance of the eagle feather in particular, they're fine with it, right? They allow it in many cases. Can you talk about just that understanding that comes sometimes with just that simple explanation that you just gave?
Yes, and I think especially when, you know, if some people, you know, some parents will go to, like, the Native American Rights Fund, which is a nonprofit organization that is kind of a legal defense fund. You know, folks from that organization might contact the schools. It usually gets their attention. And they might maybe review it more seriously. Because one of the things that I did find, it seems that perhaps whatever, you know, policy the school had or didn't have doesn't really get communicated necessarily to all of the administrators in the school. And some folks are more enthusiastic than others. You'll find that students are told, no, you can't wear anything. No, no feather. You can't wear any beadwork. You can't wear any regalia. And then when I saw, for instance, when a journalist or such as myself would contact the school, the principal would, it was a misunderstanding. So I think that maybe there are a lot more misunderstandings than we know about. And then when people give some more pushback by, you know, perhaps contacting the media or contacting an attorney or the Native American Rights Fund, then the school realizes, you know, maybe we've made a mistake here. And maybe we should, perhaps reconsider. So that's kind of what I'm finding. Some schools do, you know, they do seem to, turn around and realize that this is not a decoration. This is like, you know, this is far deeper. But some schools totally dig in their heels, you know, and just say, no, absolutely not. We're opening the door to all kinds of outlandish decorations and things that would be, you know, profane and offensive. So it's kind of, we see the spectrum in the way schools react.
We're talking to Mary Annette Pember, national correspondent for Indian Country Today. She recently wrote the piece, Graduation Shouldn't Be Another Form of Erasure, looking at eagle feathers, for example, worn by Native American students at graduation, sometimes prevented from wearing them by schools. Sometimes lawsuits happen as a result. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions, maybe your own experiences at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's hear from a caller now. Barbara is with us in Grand Marsh. Barbara, hi.
Hi. My comment is this. I am 82 years old, and the world has gone insane. Who is that hurting? I understand now when my mother was elderly and she said, I'm glad I'm as old as I am. I understand what she meant. Does this also mean that if a child wants to wear a cross on her neck or his neck, that will be offensive to someone? What in the world is going on? Who is that offending if that person wants to honor their heritage? And that is my comment, and I want to say, wake up, world. People should get a job or do something different with starting to say things are bad. Thank you very much.
Barbara, thanks for the call. Mary, Barbara, okay with the idea, I think, of then of having the eagle feather and not sure why anybody would be upset by it, if I'm hearing her correctly, Mary.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what Barbara said. Someone, we should all get jobs, which is good. I'm for that. I support it fully.
Thanks for the call at 800-642-1234. This idea, and I've mentioned the headline a couple times, another form of erasure. And one of the sources you talked to raised that phrase, worried that this is a way of potentially another way of erasing Native American identity, history, and in the present day. Can you talk about that concept?
Well, let's take a look at the state of Wisconsin. I know, I think it was in the 90s when they passed Act 31, which actually mandates that public schools teach Native American history. And there are, of course, as you know, there's 11 federally recognized tribes in the state, but a lot of schools just don't do it. So people know very little about contemporary Native Americans and Native American history. They know very little about Native treaties, which actually I'm just writing about that now, so it's kind of in my mind. But treaties, for instance, aren't just for Native Americans. For their rights, treaties actually benefit everybody. So it's been kind of criminal, I think, the lack of education that we give our students about Native people. And I think that perhaps, that contributes to quote-unquote erasure, which is we are continually kind of cast as denizens of the past that are gone now. And in fact, there's, in Wisconsin, I think about 40 to 50,000 Native folks in the state. So we're very alive, and we go to school, and we work, and we pay taxes.
We're talking to Mary Annette Pember right now, national correspondent for Indian Country Today, also a citizen of the Red Cliff Band of Wisconsin Ojibwe. She recently wrote the piece, Graduations Shouldn't Be Another Form of Erasure. It takes a look at the challenges Native American students face when they want to display their cultural heritage at milestone events, and very timely right now, including high school graduation. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you have a question you'd like to share? Maybe an experience if you or someone in your family had this issue come up at their own high school graduation. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we continue our conversation about Indigenous students being, in some cases, barred from wearing regalia, eagle feathers, other important symbols at their high school graduation, or having to go through some difficulty to convince schools to allow them to do so, a topic during this graduation season. Mary Annette Pember stays with us. She's a national correspondent for Indian Country Today. She recently wrote about this, a piece titled, Graduation Shouldn't Be Another Form of Erasure. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your thoughts on this? Do you think that, hey, every kid should be dressed alike at that graduation ceremony? Or do you want to see Native American kids as they graduate being able to wear these important cultural symbols? 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Mary Annette, you mentioned that in some cases, schools, once they hear from parents or maybe a national organization, they're willing to change their policy. It has gone to lawsuits, though. Do we know how those have turned out? What have courts ruled in cases where this has gone to courts?
Well, I don't know what finally has happened in Arizona with the Walm versus Arizona lawsuit. Larissa Walm, she was attending Valley Vista High School a couple of years ago, and she was just asked to leave for graduation. She showed up in a very small eagle feather on her cap, and very conservative, I think, looking regalia that she has. But no, they actually asked her to leave, and her family was just outraged, and they did contact the Native American Rights Fund, and they actually did bring a lawsuit against Valley Vista High School. And I think they have prevailed, but I can't tell you the details of that. But what's interesting is Arizona, as of April, has passed a law prohibiting any public school district from not allowing Native students to wear an eagle feather or a bit of regalia during their graduation ceremonies.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Janie is with us in Nakusa. Janie, hi.
Hi. Just a small comment, I guess. I would say to leave the people alone. Is it another form of colonization? You can't wear regalia. It's their culture. Why do we have to have that kind of say in everything?
Janie, thanks a lot for the call. Mary Annette, she says colonization, a recolonization in effect.
Well, you know, and that was actually something that one of my sources made a point of, that, you know, she said that when she heard initially that her daughter was not allowed to wear a feather, that she her mind immediately leapt to the boarding schools, you know, Indian boarding schools, in which were really kind of running in a lot of ways like military institutions, in which there's a very big emphasis on racial and cultural erasure and on uniformity. And I think it hits a pretty deep place for Native people.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. I think this came up in your piece, or maybe just the last time we talked to you, but the concerns that people sometimes have, like, well, oh, this is special treatment for Native Americans that no other groups are getting. What would you say to those concerns?
Yeah, that's often, particularly with treaty rights or treaty issues. And I interviewed Mary Klinesh, who's a state senator in Minnesota, and they have been trying to forward some legislation that would prohibit schools from prohibiting kids graduates to wear eagle feathers. And she said she had one of her colleagues ask her, why are we always giving the Indians so much? And she says, I told them we aren't giving them anything. We're meeting our previous agreements guaranteed in treaties. We can't go back and do everything over again. But going forward, we have opportunities to do things the way they should be done, with integrity and generosity of heart.
Let's go back to our callers now with Larry in Crystal Lake, Illinois. Larry, hi.
Yes. You know, they wear these eagles tattooed on their chest. They wear eagle feathers tattooed on their arms. They have ships on their chest. They have bleeding hearts with daggers of the said, I love my mother, death before this, dishonor, all kind of things tattooed. Go up there without a shirt on. But I think the Native Americans should be allowed to wear their historical things. The military wears all the historical clothing. Why can't the American Indians be proud of their culture? I'm proud of the American Indians.
Larry, thanks for the call. Larry is saying people could wear tattoos, I guess. So why not the eagle feather if it's an important part of their heritage, Mary Annette?
Well, I don't think I really have a comment on that.
Okay, thanks. Now, you just also published a piece, this is interesting, about quilts being made by the Band River Band, Citizens of the Bad River Band, the Lake Superior Chippewa Tribe. making quilts for volunteer graduates. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, actually, it's volunteer quilt makers there in the community. And I think one lady a few years ago really wanted to come up with a main. She, her husband, I think, was on the education committee, and they were noticing the low high school graduation rate for tribal members, and they wanted to come up with a way to really, you know, really lift them up, lift the graduates up. And so they came up with this idea of making star quilts for them, and they work together, and it has become an annual thing now. They make these star quilts, and they also will bead an eagle feather for the students. And they have a ceremony in the community. You know, it's just a, you know, just a very modest ceremony in which they really recognize their students, and people really savor it, and it's very meaningful to them.
What has been the response to these quilts, especially, I guess, from the students themselves?
Oh, they really love them. And they, you know, often sometimes the parents will, you know, if the student has a favorite color scheme or if there's something meaningful to them, they might, you know, donate material ahead of time. So and the students will say, well, you know, I look at the quilt, it's in my room, and it really reminds me about how much, you know, how much the community cares about me. And has, you know, and stands behind me and recognizes how difficult it often is for a Native person to go to a non-Native school.
We're talking to Mary Annette Pember, national correspondent for Indian Country Today, about graduation ceremonies and Native American symbols, eagle feathers and regalia, for example, whether some schools raising concerns with Native American students wearing these, court cases sometimes resulting from them. And Mary Annette, you mentioned low graduation rates for Native American students in Wisconsin and around the country. What other kind of efforts have you seen over the years aimed at tackling that?
Well, I think they've tried to, you know, perhaps introduce like social groups for students to attend, you know, maybe outside of school hours, and trying to support language efforts. But it's really been, it hasn't been really robust. You know, there are some efforts, but it's still very much, you know, high school is its own place, its own country, if you will. And it's often, you know, I think about the way one, how well one does in that environment. That's a measure, you know, how you were able to fit in is a measure of your success. So they aren't, and a lot of schools aren't necessarily really known, you know, for lifting up diversity, you know, and attention to cultural diversity in particular. So I think, you know, there are some efforts going forward, but we'd certainly like to see more.
So we got one more caller. Mike is with us in Sun Prairie. Mike, hi.
Yeah, I live in Sun Prairie, and this land was stolen from the Indians like 300 years ago. So just make a rule that says if your ancestors had their land stolen, you can wear what you want. If not, you can't.
Mike, thanks for the call. Mary Annette, we see a lot of land acknowledgments, maybe a little less blunt than Mike's. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, that's certainly pithy. You know, wear what you want. You know, well, I think it does. He's recognizing, you know, that given all that has happened with us. But I think it's not just, you know, you're sort of casting us always in this sort of, you know, poor us is not really beneficial to us. But I think just lifting us up, you know, and lifting up diversity. Not everybody is the same. And I think it's not just Native people that could benefit from that. I mean, there's many people of color that could benefit from that in schools, you know, where we often see this kind of rigidity, you know, and just this attention to, you know, uniformity may not necessarily work for everybody. I mean, there's a reason that these graduation rates are low for children of color.
In just our last few moments, Mary, if there is a school administrator, say, listening, somebody planning that graduation ceremony in the next week or two, what would you encourage them to think about?
Well, you know, I think to take the long view, and that I know often to stand, you know, if you're perhaps a mid-level administrator in school, you know, you may not want to attract the undue attention of your boss. But, you know, I would encourage people to do that and to, you know, say that this is a really pretty simple way that we can lift up Native students.
We'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us again.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Mary Annette Pember is a national correspondent for Indian Country Today. She's also a citizen of the Red Cliff Band of Wisconsin Ojibwe. She joined us to talk about challenges some Native American students face to display their cultural heritage at high school graduations. I've got a link to her full piece, Graduation Shouldn't Be Another Form of Erasure, at WPR.org. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m., it's the morning show with Kate Archer Kent. Tomorrow at 7, a Wisconsin veterinarian joins the show to talk about the challenges that animal doctors face in rural communities around the state. It's tomorrow at 7 on the morning show. Coming up next, it's news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Then the longtime talk show, The Ellen Show, announced its upcoming season will be its last. We'll talk about the history and transformation of daytime talk TV. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.